Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome. This is Dr. Michelle. You are with me, Dr. Michelle, live, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You are welcome to email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. I hope that Mother's Day was, number one, if it was traumatic for you, that, hey, you're listening here now, so you got through it, so that's awesome. That's what many of us have to do. Many of us out there have to do for a multitude of reasons. Tragedies occur in your life or depressions, or you're worrying about your kids. Something's going on. And it's not always a happy day. It's like Christmas. So let's just put our minds around it. And it's really difficult for Catholics in many ways, in that for those who have fall under the bell curve, let's say, of a Catholic ideal or just a traditional ideal, and have, you know, had their hard knocks, but have done okay in life and are surrounded by their kids and grandkids, and people are planning meals and this and that. It's wonderful. And I went up for a blessing on the Saturday vigil for the mothers. And the woman in front of me was, oh my gosh, she probably was 4'10". And she was kind of bent over, gray hair. And, you know, we were all praying with the blessing. It was very sweet. It was very beautiful. The priest who gave the prayer, it was really beautiful because it was really stating some just reality about being a mother, being a woman, and what, you know, what we give to the earth as a woman. So that's a really kind of a cool thing, no matter what the person's story was that was standing there. But the woman in front of me, you know, she evidently, as we're walking back, she had great grandchildren. And so she had this fullness around her. And many of us up there, I was one of them. My kids weren't in the same state as me, and we've had our rocky roads in life, and there's going to be, at some point, you know, maybe I'll be that woman in some respects, but I'll never be that woman in the respects in my own imagination. And many of you out there air the same thing. We have in our imaginations this woman, and we see that we're not them. And then we feel less than, and then we feel like we've missed a mark somewhere. And we feel hurt and pain. So why don't we look at it this way? Take a look at your life. Take a look at your life and just say again, thank you. Thank you for this life, because it is the only one I have. And that's it. And if your Mother's Day was filled with you were the person who could not spend 3 hours in front of a grocery store card aisle saying, I don't feel this, I don't feel this, I don't feel this, as I know many of you did, or you're the person that thought, you know what, this is, I just can't wait to do this again. I love praising my mother. Or if you're the person who yourself has had your own trauma as a mother, and either one of your children isn't living, or have given your child up for adoption during a period of addiction, you are there. I know you are because I talked to you. So, however it went for you, the fact that today's Monday and that we embrace all of life, even the roads that are difficult. And, you know, you look around and you think, look at the people in foster care. Look at all of you who have adopted kids. Look at all of you who who've had children who've been involved in addictions or have gone really or have personality disorders and have harmed other people, harmed members of your family, stolen from them, lied to you. This is all part of our life. And one of the great things that I'll share with you, and then we're going to get into our topic today, which is going to be children of traumatized parents, because we're all out there, whether you've have some undisclosed or undiagnosed post-traumatic stress disorder from a tour in Afghanistan, or perhaps something just you've never left the States, but you're on a military base and you've got some trauma, or you're someone who was torn from your parents, or your parents were torn from their parents. However you may have experienced trauma, or your parents may have experienced trauma, or your children may have experienced trauma, we're going to talk about what are some of the unique things that occur when a child is the child of a traumatized parent. So we want to talk about those things. But one thing that the priest said that I want to share with you that was really pretty cool when he was talking about things, he said, you know, because he's also talking about the ascension. So vigil had kind of had everything rolled into one. You could either do your holy, it's a movable feast. So, you know, some churches did their ascension feast in the week, and some people combined them, or some parishes combined them. So this was kind of combined. And so he combined, he's just the sweetest guy. Anyway, he combined some concepts about the ascension and the apostles' point of view along with mothers and Mother's Day. So he kind of combined these things. And so I kind of put them together in my own head. And one of the things he said, no matter who you are and no matter what your problems are and your family discord is and your pains and your aches and your sorrows and your bitternesses and your anger and your resentment and your fighting, he said, you know, you would think that when the apostles saw the risen God, saw the ascension into heaven, that it would have changed them permanently. He didn't quite say that, but I'm saying it, that it would have changed them permanently. But his point was, it didn't change them permanently. What happened? I mean, you would think that in the one hand, as he said, on the one hand, when it said that they saw him rise up and they were filled with joy, that on the one hand, their pain and sorrow to see the one they loved so much and that was their guide and their shepherd and their end-all, be-all, and a beloved, actually ascend, that they would have been sad to have him go, but they were filled with joy. So there was a joyfulness in the fact that he was leaving them. But a lot of that joy was that it's just the marvel at the fulfillment of a word, that certain things that they didn't understand were starting to somehow gel a little bit. But however, as we go on, fast forward a few minutes and fast forward a few days and a few years, people started just being people again. They started infighting and they started like dividing, and they were just their scruffy little selves again, as they were when he was there and as they were before they met him. So in that way, the priest was letting us know, look, you know, this is all part of being human. This is why we go to confession. This is why we get cleansed. This is why we take spiritual baths every day, spiritual showers. You already know those people out there that are so broken they don't take a physical shower, and what happens with them. Well, imagine in yourself the spiritual shower. You just don't take one. You know, you've got to keep going. So when we look at our lives and we look at whether it's in the form of the lost opportunities of being a mother. As a priest once said to me, I bear all kinds of fruit and I don't have one biological or physical child, but I have a plethora of children. And sometimes it's very little consolation if you have your I know people who have their one and only child who died before they did, obviously, because they're alive. And the pain is great. And for them, Mother's Day is a marker of that pain. At the same time, just like with the Ascension, you can embrace the tomorrow. You can embrace the fulfillment of the word. You can rely on promises, spiritual promises, that your road is not for naught, that your road is an important road. Your road is a good road. And it doesn't make you any less of who you are. It does not make you any less of a mother. And that doesn't mean that you go around like a big mother hen knitting all the baby booties for the world. It could be that. I don't want to make that. I know many people who do that. And I tried those little shoes on myself, not the baby booties. I tried the shoes on, well, I'll be this kind of person. You know, I'll be that kind of person. And then I realized, you know, I need to give the way I know to give. And I can get out of my comfort zone and do things I've not experienced before. But maybe, you know, with my personality, just like Jesus came to all the different apostles in their personality, he gave them different tasks. He charged them with different things because of their personalities. So within your personality, you're continuing, no matter what place you are, if you are the one who's got, you know, 100 people around you that are from all the generations that came from you, and every year they remember Mother's Day, and you always live in the same town, or someone else who's alone, completely alone. Maybe they had a child, maybe they have an adopted child or a stepchild. Understand that you are an important part in the world, and you are an important part for that person. And that will lead us into our main topic today, which is children of traumatized parents. Now, I said last week before we left that we would go into what it's like to be that kind of person who doesn't feel right in the way that they don't resonate with the typical sentiments of a Mother's Day. Well, a lot of people who might feel that way for reasons unknown to themselves are in fact children of traumatized parents. So we're going to look at what the VA, nice clinical stuff, what they have to say about it. We're going to relate that to foster, adopted children, adjustment disorders, and we'll start on the other side of the break. This is Dr. Michelle.
Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You are walking with me on our road together every day, Dr. Michelle Live. Today we are post Mother's Day. We're post Kentucky Derby, and we're on our way to look at our lives in a total way. Now, first of all, I want to lay out that life is not it is a mystery in the way that at once it is complicated and it's very simple. And interestingly and weirdly and paradoxically enough, sometimes the most simple things are the most difficult. And sometimes the easiest things are the hardest. I mean, it doesn't make sense, but it's true. So at the very bottom line, the platform, we're going to lay our nice good soil out here to plant our garden. So we're going to talk about children of traumatized parents. But I want to lay out this little garden here, and here's the soil. The soil is with sunshine, water, and the right nutrients, your garden will grow. And you grew from a garden as well. And the right nutrients is enough love, is a center, is a self-worth. Those are the nutrients. Now, without even saying it, and I need to say it now, lest you think that perhaps I'm ignoring this part, your spirit is like it's the ground. It's holy ground. So your spirit is all the above. So it is the sunshine, it is the water, it is those little micronutrients, and it's the soil itself. However, on our material world, in our natural world, of which we are, that's what we are natural beings, in our natural world, there are just some fundamental things that we need. And then we can overcome anything. And what we need is love. We need to have a sense of self. And we need that nurturing, that, and part of nurture, if you nurture a garden, you need to protect it. You need to have safety. You need to keep it away from things that would eat it. You need to keep away from things that would poison it. You need to keep it away from the harsh winds. You need to keep it away from the scorching sun. You need to keep it away from, you need to shield it from wherever your environment is. So if you're living in New England and you have many cloudy days, or you're living in Kentucky and you have many cloudy days, you're going to nurture that differently, and you're going to protect your little garden differently, where you could have a snow in May. You're going to protect that garden differently than you're going to protect the one in Phoenix, Arizona, where there is no water, there are no clouds, and you have to protect it from 120 degree weather. So these are the things we have to be able to understand a little bit. That's why I go into them. So in one way, oftentimes we look at our history of our world. There weren't, as I said before, psychologists, psychiatrists, self-help books. They weren't there. But we also had things that we don't have now. Large extended families, tribal history, constant tribal history. Even when we try to find our own roots, it just doesn't work in an immovable world. It just doesn't work. We are fast migrating now, people. And we have been since this country was founded, and before, where it was less and less impossible. It was more and more possible, saying it another way, to move, and move now, move fast, move quickly. But you couldn't necessarily take your whole family, nor necessarily did you want to. So now we just, we've left a lot of that nurturance behind, or that education on how to nurture. So we do find that we have a lot of traumatized people. And why do we have them? Well, for a number of reasons. We have them from natural disasters. We have them from war. We have them from neglect. We have them from victims of abuse. We have them from just anything you can imagine. Harmed people who have children. And as I mentioned to you several weeks ago, there are more and more studies, but one of the original, I suppose, or one of the early studies looking at mice who have been traumatized, and then they have a kind of a PTSD, a post-traumatic stress disorder, in these mice. And when they have their litter of babies, when they grow up and have their litter, when they have their litter of babies, they don't nurture their babies the way that they were nurtured to begin with. And then they find that in the next generation, this is passed down. And nurturing being a very simple physical evidence key factor, they don't have the arch in their back that would somehow signal to the baby that they can nurse, or they don't have the same kind of licking behavior or the cleaning behavior. These little things that the mice still survive, but then they grew up to be not such good parents. But they find that it is not necessarily a done deal, fixed, genetic. It is passed down. But what they found, as I said before, what they found is that a methyl group, a certain chemical group, kind of attaches itself during the trauma. Some biochemical thing occurs, attaches itself on your gene. It's like a little, you know, it's like something that attaches, like a snail on a plant, you know. It attaches itself to that gene. And in doing that, anything that attaches to a gene is like a little magic key that unlocks it. And so, or turns it on or turns it off. It's like a little remote system. So I imagine there are things that can sit on genes and not affect them. Perhaps, I really don't know. However, usually when something kind of floats along or something is placed or something is there, it causes a change. It causes the gene to express something because the gene is so bizarrely but amazingly and beautifully just infinite possibilities of what can be expressed in a single gene. And we don't express them all. We express, I guess, what we need, and that's it. So the point with all this is that it is not a done deal. These are very reparable, just like you can start giving water to a plant, you can start feeding it the right food, you can start giving it the right amount of sunshine, and it will grow. You may have to prune a little here, prune a little there. You may have to worry about it for a while, but it will grow. But you have to know some of the issues. You have to know some of the problems. So when we look at children of traumatized parents, I think a good place to start, let's start with the more studied and the more, well, it's all studied, but the more obvious or the one that some of you may suffer, but also that perhaps is a little bit more distant and more understandable to describe. It's been studied by the government. There's been a lot of money poured into research, and that's an important thing. And this is, I'm going to take it straight from the VA site. So the Veterans Administration site, where they have a huge area of their website dedicated to post-traumatic stress disorder. Most of it, if not all of it, revolves around veteran post-traumatic stress disorder. By definition, will have some association with military and or war. However, over the last couple decades, really have researchers honed in on what happens to families. Now remember, post-traumatic stress disorder from war or from the military has been around a very long time. It's always been, it's been called different things, from irritable heart down to shell shock, so many different, and that's just modern day. It's been around forever. Ancient, I mean, as long as there's been war, there's been this problem. And it wasn't until the Vietnam vet era vets, when they came back, there wasn't a name for it, or they didn't recognize it as this syndrome, because each generation before them had been pretty hush-hush about it. And so a lot of them were wrongly termed paranoid schizophrenics because they had symptoms of these things. Or I think paranoid schizophrenic was the most that they were termed, and they really were not that. They really weren't. What they were exhibiting symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. And it mimicked what you might see in someone who has the paranoid type of schizophrenia. So it wasn't until then that they started saying, no, wait a minute, this is a whole different thing. That's where post-traumatic stress disorder was coined. But it was a good 30 years after some of those military, from men and women from Vietnam, came back before we actually started putting really big names to it. Probably like maybe 15 years, but it was like a good 30 years where some of them finally were saying, you know, I think maybe I've got this thing called post-traumatic stress disorder. So that's really fairly, it's exploding as far as the need and the recognition that it needs, that this really is something and it really has lasting effects in the person as well as the family, because a lot of this, the things that were attached to that person who had the wartime trauma was pretty much, more often than not, unstable family relations. Either abuse in the family, multiple marriages, followed by multiple jobs, not being able to hold employment, a lot of drug use. Not everybody, of course, but that was one of those things that you started to see a lot. Those were some of the constellation of issues that revolved around that. So now, bringing us up to speed, and the rest of the program will be on this, there has been in the last couple decades a lot more research, observation, compassion for those children who were children of the people who were traumatized. So we're going to get into that. That's going to help open up a door here, and we're going to be talking about all kinds of things this week. This is Dr. Michelle. See you on the other side of the break.
Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You're with me on Dr. Michelle Live. 573-4BREAD-4 is our number. You can text or call or DM live at breadboxmedia.com. So much to think about, so much to share, so many experiences, and every person experiences things so differently. And that can also be our little trap that we think that we are alone. When I worked with veterans, the repeated story is, well, I had these experiences for 10, 20 years. I never talked about them with anyone because I was the only one that felt them. None of my buddies felt them. None of my friends felt them. And if you were a female soldier, then you were even more isolated. But the reality is that for every person that told me that, their friend would be in the next moment and tell me the same thing, you know, or metaphorically speaking anyway. So we always think that our experiences are unique, and they are, because they only happen to you. You're the only one that experiences your experience. And at the same time, you really aren't alone. You really are not. So what did the VA do? The VA, the Veterans Administration, on their website, they've got a great website. If you just Google Veterans Administration PTSD, which stands for post-traumatic stress disorder, or if you Google PTSD just plain, or VA, you're going to get it. Now, why is this good? Perhaps you're thinking, I wasn't in the military, and you know, I'm 30 years old and no one in my family has been in the military, and I have a child, you know, who's got an issue. Why would I even think about this? Well, this is about soldiers. However, it is the same paradigm for anyone who comes from a parent who is somewhat traumatized. If your child is adopted, there's going to be some traumatization there, no matter how great of a parent you are, because the child's parents and the child's mother is not there. The smells, sights, sounds, everything. It's everything. There is a somehow a cellular recognition to a separation. And perhaps if a person was in such a bad state in their life, that was their option, the best option that they could take for the welfare of the child and for the welfare of themselves, or at least they thought so at the time, then there's going to be some sadness, some trauma, some something. So we're going to have, you know, this whole setup situation. That was the whole reason for me telling you about this methyl group that attached to genes, is that however along the line it comes into being, it does get passed down, but it gets passed down as a hitchhiker. It gets passed down as a stowaway. It does not get passed down as an irrevocable, integral part of the system. So the VA says this. This is an article written by Jennifer Price, PhD. And her intro says that the researchers, I'll kind of paraphrase as we go, that they've examined the impact of PTSD symptoms on family relations and on children of veterans in particular. Understanding how these symptoms affect relationships can help families and children of veterans cope with difficulties should they arise. Although much of the research described here has been conducted with children of Vietnam veterans, findings from the body of research may generalize to children of veterans from other eras as well as non-veterans with PTSD. Now, why is that significant? Well, one reason it's significant is as I just said, I'm going to go one step further and say all this information is going to be same song, different verse. So even though you may have no military history in your family at all, here is part of the situation. Now, here's another thing. If you, let's say you have someone for adoption and their great-great-grandfather or grandmother may have been a prisoner of war somewhere, or may have been in a pogrom, or may have been some kind of traumatized situation where their child then is like, you know, handed off somewhere or taken or stolen or the parents died, whatever. And then they grow up and then they have a child and they have a child. And here you are in 2016 in a nice little suburban area in the United States, and you don't know all the history of the child. So these traumas can get kind of passed down, but again, it's not irrevocable. So the other part of that is you may be a child of a World War II veteran or the child of a Vietnam era veteran who has children of their own. Maybe you're a child of a World War II veteran and now you have grandchildren. And a lot of those World War II vets suffered their entire lives without understanding. Is a very common story to have a World War II veteran, if there are many, there aren't that many alive now, but who will say, you know, when I went to the war, I got married, or I had a sweetheart, I came back, I married my sweetheart, and I woke up one night punching her out, and so we just got separate beds. And they lived their whole life like that. But the reason wasn't because it was more comfortable. The reason, they just never talked about it. The reason was the person had post-traumatic stress disorder. There was no abuse there. It was the middle of the night. They were having their own flashbacks and nightmares. They didn't understand them. They thought it was a sign of weakness. And oftentimes we think that any kind of mental issue is a form of weakness. So I want you all to listen up, because we all have some kind of issue in our past. And if you go one step further and talk about the veterans, let's just extrapolate it to anyone who's had some trauma. All right. So how might a veteran's PTSD symptom affect their children? Well, the number one thing that Jennifer Price, Dr. Price, talks about is the re-experiencing of symptoms. Almost anyone... Well, part of the criteria of post-traumatic stress disorder is that there's a kind of re-experiencing the trauma events throughout memories, vivid daytime memories, or dreams. So on the one hand, someone may say, look, I left that in the past. I don't think about it. But it's coming out in other ways, or it may revisit them in their dreams, and it might be disguised in their dreams, but they just may wake up sweating, or they may internalize it and have anger issues, and they may have heart palpitations, many things, because if you suppress very deeply, you may not recognize, it may not be out and out memories, but most often there'll be a sudden surge of a memory, maybe little bits and pieces of a memory, those will come out. So re-experiencing can occur suddenly, and that's a very big, important thing. So you're out with your family. I've had soldiers tell me, in Vietnam soldiers, that they were out with their family at a picnic. They have, you know, 4 or 5 kids, and they're out with their, on a nice little picnic, small town picnic. And they see somebody, all of a sudden they glance over to the next picnic table and they see someone carving a watermelon. Boom, they are back in Vietnam. And that person is no longer carving a watermelon. That person is the enemy. And they're looking for an ambush. They're looking for their own way to ambush or their places to hide or what they're going to do. And really, so they're completely taken now from their family and they're in some kind of a war with this person who is carving a watermelon for their family, just because something about them, or perhaps the knife or the situation or their hair color, anything could trigger it. And then many people will start getting maybe a little anxious or get a little irritable. Maybe one of the little grandkids or little kids is coming over and tugging at their coat string, and the person who has the post-traumatic stress disorder just gets nasty to them or snappy. Well, it's because they're kind of shaken out of their memory, but at the same time, they have this hyper physical sensation. So It can happen with very intense emotions such as grief and guilt and fear or anger. Sometimes the intrusions can be so strong or vivid that they really believe the trauma is reoccurring. And that can happen if they hear sometimes people in hear a backfiring and they just get down to the ground. They hear a car backfire and boom, it goes from 0 to 1,000 in a second. So the symptoms can be very frightening for the children, not just for the individual. So the individual, you know, you think, wow, what would it be like to be like that? Or if you are like that, you understand. But the frightening situation, if you're just there and all of a sudden mommy hits the floor or daddy hits the floor or they break out in sweat and crying, something's up. So children may not understand what is happening or why, and they might start to worry about their parents' well-being. So remember, we're talking about children of traumatized parents. We're using the military as an example, but anyone, even if they have been separated from their parents and you've adopted them, they will have a physiology that, as long as they were either in the womb or right after birth, that will have adapted in some way, shape, or form, or experienced the chemicals of trauma. We just do. We don't have a choice over the chemicals that we secrete in our glands and in our the different hormones and the different cascades that come out whenever we have this traumatic experience or a thought of the traumatic experience. So they might worry about them. So children may start worrying about them, and they may not even understand they're worrying about them. So if you have if you are a parent who's been traumatized in some way or your current situation is traumatizing, the child just may automatically start having, start cleaving more toward protection of you and feeling like, without even knowing it intellectually, that they have to modify their behavior and that they will be the key holder to your stability or instability. So we're going to pick this up on the other side of the break. This is Dr. Michelle. You are listening to Dr. Michelle Live. You can email me, dmlive@redboxmedia.com. See you after the break.
Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you're walking with me on this road, Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. Oh, my goodness. And DM, Dr. Michelle Live is available. I am available to, I have a screensaver that has the Immaculate Heart of Mary and a beautiful, beautiful paintings and the Sacred Heart of Jesus, and as I was going to give you my email address, I'm just like captivated by this one picture. I'll tell you why in a second. So my email address, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. You can email me 24/7 any day, because it's not going to wake me up, it's not going to be a problem, and I will see your email. So you're certainly welcome. Your questions, your concerns, your corrections, anything, it's always so welcome. So let me just say quickly about the Immaculate Heart of Mary. As of last week, I've said so often that we have been asked to do this Immaculate Heart Novena. And I'm not always that great at it. I'll remember it somewhere where I don't have it in front of me. So I'll just say, okay, now here's my makeshift novena. But, you know, I say it. But I'm looking at this beautiful picture, and it's the one of Mary. I've never really seen a picture, a painting like this. It's very beautiful, very vivid colors. And but the heart is so so defined, and it has the roses around the heart, and it has the sword through the heart, and that's what happens to all of us. And this is a good thing to to follow Mother's Day, but go into this thing about children of traumatized parents, because so many of you are traumatized parents. So many of you, whether you've adopted children from a faraway land, whether you have adopted children whose parents couldn't care for them, or teenage kids, or you are a teenage mom yourself, and that's a little traumatic. Oh, so many things we start off, but the mother's wound, you know, it does sometimes get carried on to the child as well, and so does the father's, and sometimes it gets carried on in these compensatory forms. It's not that you have some hideous disease and you're giving it to your child. I want to dispel any thoughts of that. Think of it more. Is that it's a compensatory, it's a series of compensating for life, for the life's trials and traumas. You always bring God into the mix, and He will help cleanse, heal, revive, revitalize, lift up. That will help. And it will help during times. You can also, man, I'm telling you, I've seen some things with these PTSD dogs that are amazing. True PTSD dogs, not just your pet. Well, your pet too will really help. But there are also dogs that are actually like a seeing eye dog. They're trained to help people with their trauma issues. So this is a really important deal that you have to go to the more non-seen. What is faith? You know, but faith is as belief in things unseen. So there are parts that are not going to be so obvious and not easy to study. But now I'm looking just kind of at the black. We're going to the skeletal frame first. So we're going to that desert. We're seeing the bones. We're going to put those bones together and say, okay, here's the bones. Then we'll put on some more, and we'll put on some more. And then hopefully this will revive so that you can identify with it, either if you were a person who comes from some background where someone was traumatized in your family, and or you happen to have a child who, whether it's your own biological child, a foster child, or an adoptive child. All right. So before the break, we were talking about these different experiences and symptoms and how a symptom of post-traumatic disorder might affect a child, the person's children. So one of them we said was re-experiencing the symptoms that a person suddenly and without prediction, you're driving along, you're singing a song, and one word of that song can lead you down to a traumatic event. And let's say you're the mom I told you about from, I don't know, 30, 40 years ago, whatever the story that I heard, and this happens all the time, but of the mom that went in, had twins, and as she's literally in recovery room, her husband announces that he's found someone else and he's not coming home. And she's there with another child and two twins. Now that's a trauma. And she could be singing nursery rhymes with the children, or getting them their first outfit for school, and hear a song and put them right back there. Same with a rape, same with a date rape, same with getting beat up, same with a trauma, same with bullying. All these things can be triggered very quickly, especially in our day where we cannot escape some kind of mass media in our ears, in our eyes, and in our senses. So there's always perfumes, there's always odors, there's always scents, which is the biggest, one of the biggest post-traumatic stress disorder triggers are something you're going to smell, believe it or not. So let's say a baby is wandering around in a war-torn area, and they smell the gasoline, or they smell the fuel of something that's exploded. They could be 6 years down the road and then just somehow come in contact with that and start acting out. And you don't know, and they don't know. So don't let this be too complicated, because you think, well, then what can I do? Well, if you know the basics, you can begin to have what we call in the medical world, or we used to call, a high index of suspicion. And what that means is not that you're a suspicious person waiting for everything. What it means is a high index of suspicion is telling you, ha, huh, all right, this is adding to this, to this, to this. I'm getting the picture now. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. It's like if you're starting to smell, that's why they put the fuel, the odor in gas, in natural gas in your stove, so that if you smell that particular smell, you have a high index of suspicion, you have a gas leak. And then what do you know about it? You know that if you light a match, it could explode. And so you try to get help for it. You try to make sure that doesn't happen. So it's the same thing with us here. So we're going to be going into this the whole week because we have several, I'll give you a prelude of that too. We have several issues because we're going to talk about the different re-experiencing. I'm going to finish a couple now. We're going to talk about how do children respond to these very things. This is the meat of what we're going to talk about. We'll probably get to that tomorrow. And we're going to talk about ways that might continue into adolescence and also can your children actually get PTSD from you and what should you do? What can you do as the person who experienced it, and what can you do as a parent? So let's go to another thing that happens with PTSD, people who suffer with it, and now we're talking about soldiers. But this is like with everything. Again, rape, date rape, abandonment, anything. Avoidance and numbing. This is big because we are very, we do this a lot, and there's endless things out there that'll help us avoid and numb. That's a lot at the crux of a lot of addictions. It's a lot of personality disorder. It's a desire or a need to run and numb yourself out so you don't feel these. So I'll finish this segment with this part. And I'll read from Jennifer Price. Because the re-experiencing symptoms characteristic of PTSD are so uncomfortable, people who have been traumatized tend to try to avoid thinking about the traumatic event. They may also attempt to avoid places and experiences that could trigger upsetting memories. As a result, okay, now listen to this key phrase, this key sentence. As a result, individuals with post-traumatic stress disorder may not want to do things or go to places such as to the store, to the movies, or out to dinner because they're so afraid they may be triggered. Children may feel, and children don't know that, so here's the child's perspective. Children may feel that their parent does not care about them, when the reality is the parent is avoiding places that are just too frightening. In addition to these active avoidance strategies, traumatized individuals often struggle with experiencing positive emotions and may feel cut off from other people, including family members. And that's a lot of the words you hear of distant. My father is so distant. My mother is so distant. My husband is so distant. That's part of it because they are afraid if they get too close, as men will report to you that they had to do in war, you don't get too close. You don't make friends because in 1 second you're watching them die or you're watching them become disfigured or something, or they're taken away. You're that sense of abandonment is so strong that you cut yourself off. The person cuts himself off because it's too painful. And it also might trigger how you felt when you really cared about someone and then something traumatic happened in war. So what the child sees, though, your child, if you are that person, your child will see that you just don't care. They have no other way to interpret this because they have, nor should they. They can't be in your memory, in your brain. They don't have the tools to deal with it. They're not, you know, they don't. Even your own spouse doesn't have the tools. They can't see what you saw. And hence, that is one of the biggest wedges that gets between husband and wife oftentimes, and why people with post-traumatic stress disorder end up with so many different broken relationships, because the original trauma, even if it happened in your childhood, keeps you at an arm's distance because your particular technique to avoid having those memory triggers, to avoid having those dreams, is to numb yourself off. What's another thing that can happen? The person who has post-traumatic stress disorder can get a hyperarousal syndrome. In other words, they are always functioning at a level of high anxiety or what we might call a pseudo ADHD. It's like they can't keep their mind on anything. They may have difficulty sleeping. They're always hyper-aroused. They're very anxious. They don't concentrate. They're easily startled, easily startled. They have a high level of irritability and may experience an exaggerated concern for their own safety and the safety of their loved ones. So in other words, they may be so hyper-vigilant. Don't do this. They may be so overprotective. So parents with PTSD themselves can therefore tend to be overprotective. irritability and low frustration tolerance can make a parent seem hostile and distant, making the child question a parent's love for them. So we're going to pick this up all week because the news is good, knowledge is power, God is good, there's always sunshine around the corner. I am telling you, there is. It sounds trite. Trust me, there is. This is Dr. Michelle. We will see you tomorrow.
Breadbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Breadbox Media.